Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hello, friends and lovers. And friends who want to be lovers. What? Oh my God, inappropriate. It's me, Heather Brooker, and this is episode 10 of Motherhood in Hollywood. And I'm officially now a profesh podcaster, I suppose, because I've made it to episode 10. I feel like there should be some kind of prize. I'm sorry. I'm dying. I have some kind of bug. I don't know if it's the allergies in the air or just my germy toddler who might have given me something. It could be anything. But I anticipate being over it very soon. And maybe it'll just add to the husky sexiness of my voice. Mm-hmm. That's right. Turn it up. Okay, clearly I've lost my mind. I need medication. Anyway, thanks so much, you guys, for tuning in to episode 10. We have a really great show today. My guest is Stephanie Drake from Mad Men. She played Meredith, Don Draper's secretary on the show. And she has a lot of great things to say about her experiences with John Hamm and John Slattery and Matt Weiner on the show, as well as just being an actress in Hollywood in general and what it has been like for her, because she literally went from not working at all, not having any credits and not having any, just maybe a couple of things on her resume to boom, being a recurring role on one of the biggest shows in Hollywood. So if you need some inspiration, guys, this is it. This is the one for you. And before we get into the interview with Stephanie, I want to take a minute to give a shout out to some of our new Twitter followers. Hello, Amy Stringfield and Justin Sorvillo, Esmeralda. Although I feel like Esmeralda might be like maybe a porn follower. I don't know. Whatever. Maybe she's a fan. She's naked, half naked in her Twitter pic. So, whatever, Esmeralda, no judgment. Thanks for following me on Twitter. Andy Bolt, my God, I love you so much. You're so talented and gorgeous. Hey, lady, how's it going? Carol Johnson and Leroy the Bedbug Dog. What is that? Who is following me on Twitter, you guys? I'm just naming like a few of the most recent followers. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm being followed by a bed bug specialist. You know what that means? I've made it. I've made it, kids. And over on Instagram, I want to give a shout out to Positively Social, Rip and Shep's Mom, Mommy's Toolbox, and who else is on here? Anna Babelli. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I hope so. Thank you guys, Cinema Jaw over on Instagram. You can follow Motherhood in Hollywood on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood and also on Twitter at MIH Podcast. Please take a moment and go find our social media outlets, guys. We've also been periscoping as well. We did a big periscope today with Stephanie and it was a lot of fun. We were just sort of figuring it out together as we went along, and I like it. I'm still getting used to all the social media stuff. I'm an old lady, I'm an old mom. Trying to stay down with what the kids are down with. But mostly I just want to get the word out about this show because I think it's a really interesting way to hear somebody else's story and somebody else's life other than your own, and kind of realize that no matter what industry you're in, you know, whether you're a lawyer, a doctor, an Indian chief. I don't know. Do they still have Indian chiefs? Whatever industry you're in, we're all connected in some way with our desire to want to succeed and our desire to want to do well, and our similar struggles and frustrations with not being able to, oftentimes do exactly what we want to do. So while this podcast was not intentionally created to be this sort of inspirational podcast, I kind of groan and roll my eyes at myself a little bit whenever I think about being an inspirational podcast. It kind of is. Yeah. I've listened back to the episodes we've had on. It's funny, you know, I love hearing my friends talk about their successes and getting to know people better and talk about the successes they've had and also the frustrations and struggle they've had as well. So I hope you guys are enjoying listening along as well. It seems like you are anyway, Esmeralda, whoever you are on Twitter. Also, guys, a quick reminder, you have 1 week left to enter the first Motherhood in Hollywood giveaway. That's over on iTunes. Take a moment, review the show, good or bad, whatever you want to say. Give us a quick review on iTunes and you'll be entered to win our Motherhood in Hollywood giveaway. It's an Honest Company bath bundle and a Motherhood in Hollywood tote bag. It can all be yours. I'm going to announce the winner live on the 21st, I believe is when it is. Let me just double check so I'm not telling tales out of school. Yes, on the 21st of September, I'm going to announce the winner live. So you guys want to make sure you're tuning in for that in case you won. Yay, winner, winner, chicken dinner. And yeah, a lot of fun things happening in my world. Enjoying life and having a great time with Channing. Oh, I want to give a special thank you to one of the top suggestions that I got for potty training for Channing. Thank you to everybody who emailed and tweeted me the tips. Last week I had asked for anybody who had any tips on getting her to poop in the potty. And my friend Natalie actually, excuse me, gave me a great tip about that she heard from a friend of hers about telling them that their poop is like going into the ocean to feed the fish and they have to poop in the potty so that the food gets to the ocean so the fish can have something to eat. Well, we've tried it for the past couple of days now. And at first she was a little confused because she's fed fish before and she knows that they get food out of a little can, fish food. But she kind of liked the idea that it was feeding the fish. So now we wave bye-bye to the poo-poo and, you know, we'll see if it sticks. So thank you so much, Natalie, for that suggestion. I appreciate it. And anybody else have any suggestions, you're welcome to email me at motherhoodinhollywood@gmail.com and or tweet me as well. Okay, guys, I'm so excited to talk to Stephanie today. I think you guys are really going to like what she has to say. I know I did. So here is Stephanie. My guest today is someone who I admire very much and loved watching all last season on Mad Men. Welcome, Stephanie Drake, everybody. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm saying everybody, like people are at their, you know, houses going, ooh, like
clapping. They are.
They're in their cars on their iPad, I'm sure, just or iPhone clapping away. I assume that's what you're all doing right now. Stephanie, thanks so much for coming by.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.
So let's get started because I know Mad Men is a topic you talk about a lot. So let's talk about that right off the bat. Okay. Tell me about your character on Mad Men. You played Meredith, right?
I did. Sorry, my nose just hit the microphone.
It's okay, you didn't hear it.
Yeah, I played Meredith. She started out as the receptionist at Sterling Cooper Draper Price and then somehow worked her way up to the big boss man's personal secretary, Don so Draper.
Right. What was that audition like for you? Was it just like a casual call for possible recurring? Because I know we get those a lot. It'll say it's like a co-star, but it's a possible recurring, which of course your heart skips a beat a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I wasn't going out a whole lot theatrically. Mm-hmm. Mostly just commercially at the time, mm-hmm. and got the call from my agent. Of course, I was thrilled, mostly just to have an audition.
Sure.
it was a perk that it was for Mad Men. And I actually had a date planned that night mm-hmm. with a guy, and I had to cancel.
Oh.
Because I had to prepare.
Did he understand?
He totally understood. Don't think we went out again. We may have gone out one more time after that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'd never seen the show.
Oh.
It was not on my radar.
You know, I found that it's a show that it doesn't appeal to everyone, but I feel like if everybody watched it, they would like it. Because when we first started watching Mad Men, the first 5 episodes or so were like a little slow. They were a little heavy and dramatic. And we were like, kind of, where is this going? You know, but then something happened around like the 4th or 5th episode. And it was like, oh, like something clicked. And we were like, we get it.
Yeah.
This man is the anti-hero. He is so interesting and dark. But you're kind of rooting for him, mm-hmm. and it's strange. So that's when we got hooked is in the first season. And then we binge watched it. We didn't watch it from the beginning when it was live. Yeah. We probably started when it was in about season 3 on mm-hmm. Netflix. Loved it.
I know. It's such a good show.
So good.
my parents were big fans.
Oh, really? From the beginning?
Day one.
Oh, wow.
And they had told me about it, and I was like, nah, well, my parents liked it. Why would I like it?
Right, right.
60s.
I wonder if it's a generational thing, maybe.
I mean, I think that has a lot to do with it. Mm-hmm. So, but then when I got the call for the audition, I was a good little actress and mm-hmm. sat down and watched an episode, so I knew the tone and the genre and all that stuff. And I was like, wow, this show's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, you know, auditioned. It was just a pre-read with the casting director, and then she asked me to come back later that day for the producer session.
Who cast Mad Men?
It was Schiff Audino.
Oh, Schiff Audino. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
so right. I had to drive all the way downtown, which, you know, is a feat in and of itself. I was working in retail at the time, so I had to, you know, change really quick in the bathroom and then get in my car and drive downtown. And then I went back to my retail job, and then I went back downtown. I was like all over the place that day.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do, you know, for those auditions. It's nice that your retail job let you do that, though.
It was nice. Yeah. I was really lucky. And that night, my agent called, and I was put on hold, and a week later I was working.
Wow.
And then 3 years later I was still working,
because you started in season 4 or 5.
Five.
Okay. And it was start off to be a small part. When did you know when you were on set that it was going to be a bigger part, or was it just a total surprise?
I never knew. Even when we were shooting the final 7 episodes, mm-hmm. which, watching back, I'm in it quite a lot.
Yeah, you are.
But shooting them, it didn't seem like I was in it that much.
Was it because you were only there for like a couple days at a time?
Yeah.
And then it would be a week or two later and you'd come back?
Mm-hmm.
I see.
It seemed like it, you know, had kind of been the whole time, like scene here, scene there.
Yeah,
like I knew it had gotten a little bit bigger because I was now his secretary, but I didn't think a whole lot of it. Like, I remember talking to Matt Weiner, mm-hmm. the creator of the mm-hmm. show, on set
it's
one day.
It's not Weiner, though.
It's not Weiner. It is Weiner.
It is Weiner.
Yeah.
Every time I see that, I'm like, haha, his name's Weiner. And my husband's like, you are a 4-year-old.
God, yeah.
Matt Weiner, got it.
And we were talking one day, and he was like, just wait until these last 7 episodes come out. I think you're going to be, you know, like
happy.
Swarmed and happy.
Oh, wow.
And you're going to
so
get
great.
A lot of attention and a lot of love and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, you probably say that to everybody.
You say that to all the secretaries.
Yeah. Like, I didn't really think much of it. And then mm-hmm. I'm telling you, once those episodes started airing, it was, I mean, it pretty much changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been all good since then. So I wrote him an email telling him that he was right.
Oh, that's so
nice. And he was
nice.
Like, I know, I'm always right.
Oh my gosh. And then you're like, and what else are you working on?
I know. Hire me again, please.
I can't imagine what that would be like. I've heard stories like that happening to actors before, where you get that co-star part and they say, oh, we might bring you back. You just never know. And then you do get brought back, and you get a great storyline, and you know, the writers just really take care of you. And it's so special and so wonderful when it happens. And so when it was happening to you, like, what did you feel, extra pressure at the time, or were you just sort of like, yay, I get to do this part for another time? Or like,
yeah, I was just thrilled to well, I mean, I was always nervous, and there was always that pressure to mm-hmm. just be on top of your game. I mean, it is Mad Men, and especially the episodes that would be directed by Matt, you know, you want to just
were they different
do your
than
best.
The other episodes?
I feel like there was a little bit more pressure when he was directing.
Sure. Did John Slattery direct an episode with you? Did I read?
He did. He directed a couple. Mm-hmm. Season 6.
Oh, he is just so
he's
funny.
Great.
And he's also so handsome.
I know.
Oh my gosh. And we'll get to John Hamm in a second too. But like, John Slattery, every single time, it's like, you want to be friends with that guy. You want to like, I don't know if he's really like that in person or not, but I imagine that there's a big part of his character that was like that.
He's very funny in person, mm-hmm. very nice, very interested in things that you're doing. He would always ask me what I'm up to.
Oh, nice.
I felt so lucky that I got to have that final scene with him and Beth Hall, who plays Caroline.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Matt telling us that, because I was told that episode 12 would be my last. So I finish episode 12. I'm saying goodbye to everybody. I gave John Hamm a picture of the two of us that I had printed out. Aww, like, nice. I prepared a little speech to give after they yelled cut. And then they were like, okay, that's an episode wrap for Stephanie. I was like, no, that's a series wrap. I'm done. Everyone told me, like, this is it. And then I ended up coming back for the final episode, which was such a nice surprise.
Yeah, totally. Especially because I feel like they needed to wrap up Meredith's storyline a little bit. They needed to put a little something on her. Like, even though you're sort of let go, I mean, mm-hmm. in a good way. You know, it's like, I don't want to say you were fired, but like... you just sort of wonder, did he bring her back? Do you think do people ask you that? Do you think, like, maybe in the future, like, once he comes up with that brilliant Coke idea, he's like, oh, I need Meredith.
I think he brings her back before the Coke ad.
Oh
yeah, as soon as he gets back to New York. Oh, for sure. She's probably back.
Yeah, for sure.
Handling his life again.
Yeah.
But then there's also been speculation that maybe Meredith goes off to Jones Company. Although I don't know about that. Yeah. After the whole airplane incident. I don't know if she would ever hire Meredith.
Yeah.
But who knows? Or maybe Meredith just goes off and does something totally different.
I feel like I want Meredith to be back with Dawn. In my own fandom world, in my own mind.
They had a nice relationship.
They did. It was so fun. And I love that you got to have that weird kiss.
Hell yes.
Because literally, I think everybody went, what?
Like, so awkward.
It was so awkward, but lovely. Like, because your character was so sweet and like, you just were sort of rooting for her. But at the same time, you're like, ooh. It's that same feeling with like Steve Carell on The Office whenever he was playing Michael Scott. You just sort of go, ooh, stop it. You're embarrassing yourself. But I like that. I like when TV makes me uncomfortable and characters make you a little bit uncomfortable because it's sort of endearing.
Mm-hmm. Especially in a world like Mad Men when everything was so serious. You have to have those lighter moments.
Oh, yeah. Because there were some episodes that were really, really heavy. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite episodes was with Peggy and Dawn in the office. And they basically shot the whole thing in the office. Dawn's office. And it was just super dramatic. And they went from like moments of levity to dark, you know, heavy moments, and it just really showed their relationship a lot. The writing on that show was just phenomenal.
So good.
So okay, go back to the kiss with Don Draper. Go back to the kiss with John Hamm. I'm sure you've been asked about this a thousand times.
I wish I could relive it. It feels like such a blur now.
Yeah.
Because it happened so fast.
So fast. How many takes did you have to do with that kissing scene?
I think we did anywhere between 12 and 15 because there were three different setups. There was a master and then from each our coverage. Angle. And we must have done three, four apiece.
Wow.
They did my coverage first. Mm-hmm. So I could like relax then by the end.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And it was a late night. And the very next morning, I was leaving to go meet my new nephew.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
So it was a whirlwind emotional weekend. I'm sure.
He's just so handsome. And I have a feeling he's just as handsome in real life.
He is.
And he also seems so like he would be very nice and funny. Even though he plays such a heavy character, I don't know. I've seen his comedy stuff, and he seems like he would have a good sense of humor as well. Was that your impression, too?
He was wonderful. He was so supportive and nice and just really – you could tell he just wanted me to do well. Like, he didn't try and take over the scene or anything like that. Like, he really just wanted me to – do my best and was there for me. And afterwards, anytime, and that was our first like big scene together. Mm-hmm. We'd done some stuff before that, but that was the first time. I mean, we like put our lips on each other. and afterwards, he just.
At least it wasn't like, hi, nice to meet you. Like,
yeah, exactly.
And then you have a kissing scene. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So
I just actually had that experience.
Oh, really?
It was day two, but so I had to kiss my husband on the That movie that I just did. Fear Inc.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. And yeah, it's super awkward. So I mean, there's nothing really romantic or glamorous or anything about it.
No.
Mm-mm. It's just awkward. I just do it.
Yeah. I don't kiss a lot of other people.
For work or in real life?
I've been married now almost 14 years going on 15. Is
that
right?
That's amazing.
Oh my God, I think I just forgot for a second. I think it's almost 15 years. And we, you know, he's my man, my main squeeze. And I remember having to do an acting scene one time in class. And my acting teacher was very like, I want to get everyone outside their comfort zone. And Heather, I want you to feel like sexy and all this stuff. And I'm like, I feel sexy. Yeah. I'm good. I feel real sexy.
I didn't need to kiss someone and he's like, feel sexy.
He wanted to do like a dramatic improv where we kiss each other at the end. And I was like, oh, I don't really want to do that. Like, I don't know. I know we're supposed to be actors and we're supposed to be able to just kiss anybody or be in love with anybody and that's your scene partner, and but it's still so awkward for me. That's where I as an actor I struggle a lot.
Yeah.
Getting outside my comfort zone with romantic scenes.
I mean, I don't think it ever becomes comfortable. Mm-mm. I mean, maybe the more you do it, I don't know. I haven't had to do it that much.
Right.
But yeah, it's gonna be awkward. But I don't know if like a classroom is the right setting to have to do that. I mean, if you're getting paid.
Yeah.
And you're going to be in a movie or a TV show, like, of course you're going to do it. You're going to suck it up and do it. But a class? I don't know. I've never been in a class where I've had to do that. And I don't think I'd want to.
I know. I think we did it one time. And then I was like, I'm good. I feel really good about it. I feel really, I'm fine. And I did not want to do it. Again, yeah. I was like, okay. Plus, the guy had like a beard, and it was just yucky.
Yeah.
I
mean, and if you don't have to, I don't know why you would.
Yeah, I think it was just this particular acting teacher trying to, you know, push us to new boundaries. You know, there's those acting teachers that want to do that, which, you know, I understand, I appreciate, but I just don't know that that's an area that I need to be pushed in.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are those, I mean, I don't know if these are actually true, but those urban legends of the classes where you go and they make you take your clothes off.
What? Does that exist?
I don't know. I feel like I've heard so many stories.
And they
about
probably
that.
Charge you $600 a month. It's some outrageous
amount. And it's to, you know, just be your most comfortable self and that and get outside your comfort zone. And like, that's fine. But I'd rather take a stand-up class to get outside my comfort zone. Not strip in front of other people.
My
like,
comfort zone is sweatpants.
I don't see how that helps. Yeah.
I'm totally comfortable right now. I'm in my sweatpants. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the acting classes are very strange. Do you take an acting class right now?
I do. I'm taking the first level at Groundlings because I do like getting outside my comfort zone.
Yeah,
I think it's
what made you go to Groundlings?
Because I've done everywhere else. I've taken class everywhere else.
Oh, yeah. You've studied at UCB before, right?
I did UCB. I took a class at IO West. Mm-hmm. So
what did you think about the difference between the two, UCB and IO? Those are big acting schools, or big, I should say, improv schools out here.
Yeah.
And UCB is having a huge go of it. Like, their new facility is massive, and lines around the block for people to get in and see the shows. And I think it's mostly acting students who are going because they're new actors, because they're hearing that's where all the new talent is being farmed from.
That's what it seems like. I liked UCB. I only took two levels there, and then it was absolutely impossible to get into the third level they only give so many classes.
Yeah.
Like, you literally had to sign up within seconds of them opening the class. So then after that, I was like, okay, I'll just, you know, go somewhere else. I liked it. I liked UCB because it is very slice of life.
Did you get on a team there? An improv team?
No. Or a sketch team? No, I never got that far. Mm-hmm.
I'm at level two right now, thinking about going to level three. I can't decide if I want to do more improv because I've done so much improv, or if I want to go back to doing stand-up. I'm trying to decide between the two.
I mean, they're both great for different reasons.
Did you take stand-up with Jude?
I did.
Okay, because I was stalking your website, and I saw your picture up against the curtain, and I'm like, I have a picture just like that. And I was like, you must have done stand-up with Jude.
I did, and I loved
She's
it.
She's so great.
She's wonderful.
She's like this magical, like, joyful, silly, you know, woman.
I recommend that class to anybody, yes. everybody.
Yeah, Judith Shelton's stand-up class, if you guys are in the LA area looking to try your hand at stand-up.
Get outside your comfort
zone. Yeah, get outside your comfort zone. And also not spend an arm and a leg, because her class is very affordable. And that's one of the big reasons I took it. I was like, oh, I can afford this. Mm-hmm. And it was close to my house. Yeah, she's great. So you did stand up?
I did that at the end of last year. Mm-hmm. And then recently. Yeah. And then we met in the writing classes.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that how you got referred to the writing class, was through Jude? Is that what you said? Or how did you end up finding the writing class?
I found, so my friend Jill Alexander, do you know mm-hmm. Jill?
I know Jill. We took it, we were at BGB Acting Studio like a year and a half ago. I don't know if she's still there.
You know, I think she might be teaching over there now.
No way.
Someone had her as a substitute. I think she might be
really? Oh, wow.
teaching there. Mm-hmm. Well, she's wonderful. I met her on Mad Men.
Yeah, she's great.
And she's kind of become a mentor of mine. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if she knows that, but I think that. And I pretty much just do whatever she does. Mm-hmm. So she had taken Judith Shelton's stand-up class, so I took it. And then she had taken Ed's writing class, and that's why I took it.
Oh, my God.
And I read her pilot that she wrote for his class, and I was like, oh, wow, because I'd been thinking about writing.
Yeah.
And the stand-up got me in the mood.
In the mood,
to
the
write.
Creative mood. It does that, like, mm-hmm. because her writing exercise is really helpful.
Yeah.
I'm sure similar to other writing stuff in stand-up. But it's certainly, like, gets your mind thinking about jokes and what's funny and what you like and your point of view, mm-hmm. which I think... That's something I struggle with a lot. Is
Me too.
I feel like I have opinions, but I don't necessarily know how that translates to my point of view, and especially when it comes to comedy.
Yeah, that writing. Was a huge thing I learned in her class. Like, I would come in and I'd go up and do my homework that we had done, that we had to come in with, and she's like, Stephanie, I'm not really seeing any like strong opinions.
Where are
or
you
point
in
of
there?
Views.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh gosh, I don't. I mean, I know I have them, but I'm not good at expressing them. I'm really not. And that was huge. I'm mm-hmm. so glad.
Do you feel like it helped? Like, do you have a grasp on that now? Because in our writing class, your specs script, Daisy and I talked about this on the show, was really good.
Thank you.
We were both like, I mean, honestly, the ladies in the class were killing it. And we, I
by
mean,
far.
Yeah. Not to name names, but... Yeah, no, we had, Stephanie and I met in a, even though we have mutual friends, we met in a writing class with Daisy. And man, I loved that class. I felt really inspired by it. But when I was on my own and not in the class anymore, I just sort of felt like lost again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But you continued on and you took the pilot class,
right? I did. I took the pilot class right after we finished the spec class. I don't even think there was a week.
No, yeah, it went right into it.
And it was great. Ed Lee is an amazing teacher.
Yeah, he's really good.
And he's so supportive and nice and doesn't make you feel bad
mm-hmm.
if you don't, you know,
get something or you're not like the most funny mm-hmm. or you know what I mean? Yeah, he's really good.
I actually had lunch with him maybe about a month ago.
Oh, really?
I did. We wanted to catch up and I felt like I needed some... almost like a kick in the pants to get writing again, because honestly, I mean, I think we kind of had the same experience. Once the class is over and I don't have a deadline, I don't write.
It's that deadline.
Yeah.
It helps. It helps me with this podcast because if I know I have someone coming over to tape it, I'm like, I got to clean my house. Or I'm like, I got to like get everything ready to go and like do my research and all of that, because otherwise then I'm like, oh, I got time, you know?
Yeah.
And it's totally the same thing with my writing. My blog that I'm trying to do, I don't want to be like every day posting something. I don't know that I have the energy or the ideas enough to be that kind of a blogger, but I wish I had the discipline enough to sit down and write more consistently.
Yeah.
Are you finding that you're still struggling with the writing now that your class is over? Have you gone back and revisited your pilot or your spec?
I have not picked up the spec since class ended. And the pilot, I picked up maybe once or twice after the class ended and haven't touched it since.
Oh, wow.
I know, which is such a shame
because
I wrote a whole pilot.
You wrote a pilot and it was an original idea and all of your original work. And so,
I mean, that's not to say I can't go home today and pick it back up.
Totally.
But I found that the first draft, which Ed calls the vomit draft.
Yeah, the vomit draft.
Is the easiest because you can pretty much write whatever.
Yeah.
If it's bad, it's fine because it's your vomit draft. It doesn't matter. It's right. When you have to start going back and revising. That's yeah. When you actually have to start being creative mm-hmm. and funny. And that freaks me out. And
working. Did you write a comedy? Is that what you're writing?
Yeah.
And you have to try to figure out. My thing is, it's like I have such a specific sense of humor. It's a little dark. It's a little blue. It's very sarcastic. Mm-hmm. And like not everybody appreciates it. Not everybody gets it. So my thing is, it's like I could be sitting here writing away and just be writing like really mean, nasty stuff. And someone would read it and go, this is horrible. Like, you're so mean.
Yeah, but it wouldn't another necessarily... person would love it.
Would love it. Yeah. Right, right. My friend Rachel said, you know, because I mentioned that to her about the podcast. And I was kind of afraid at first. Like, people would be like, oh, my God, this girl's kind of a bitch. And she goes, well, then those aren't the people you want listening to your show. And I'm like, oh, fair enough. Yeah. That's a good point. I have to remind myself, I'm not going to be for everybody. You're mm-hmm. not going to be for everybody. And our writing style certainly wouldn't be either. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Like, not everybody loves Transparent. It's a great show. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody loves The Golden Girls. They should.
I know. Come on. I mean, not everybody loved Mad Men.
I know. I
mean,
yeah. It's yeah.
just, yeah, you can't please everybody.
You can't please everybody. I think, though, that that's the trouble that major network sitcoms have. Or maybe not trouble. Maybe that's what they're doing right. Like your big Chuck Lorre shows mm-hmm. that have been on for a decade or more, the half hour comedies, because they do have a formula that generally pleases everybody.
Yeah, that's true. I just went to a taping of the show Mom.
Oh, yeah. Because your friend's on it.
My friend Beth Hall is on it. Yeah, yeah. She's amazing. Talk about.
And she's a series regular now, right?
Yeah. And talk about like a wonderful story. She had gone. She was on the show once last season mm-hmm. as a completely different part.
Oh,
they cut her part an hour before the show, but she still had to be in as like kind of like a background person because they cut her lines.
Oh, no.
And so she's sitting there while they're taping and, you know, being so nice and lovely and gracious. And everyone was saying how much they loved her and they want her back.
Yeah.
Like for sure.
As an actor, that's so heartbreaking when you find out you've been cut.
Oh. I know, but you still have to sit there and watch the whole episode. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
And then they, like, I guess maybe a couple episodes later, they had written a new part.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't like to think that they had her in mind, but obviously they did.
Oh.
And they gave it to her, and now she's a series regular.
Oh, I mean, that's so great.
Yeah. And I think the part originally started as maybe a one line
mm-hmm.
type deal, and then it's just grown.
So I've been having
That's the thing you never know.
You never know. I've been having this debate lately with some of my actor friends who are doing really well. They're booking guest stars. They are working a lot. And they're saying, no, don't do the co-star parts. Mm-hmm. Turn those down. Like, I even have some friends who've been out here for 10 years or more who are like, ooh, no, I don't do one and two line parts.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like, well, excuse me. If you don't need to work, fine.
Right.
It's still a job. The struggle is, I think, with those parts that could transition into something larger, because you never know. Also, you're meeting people on set. Like, you're meeting director, producer, executive producer, other actors,
Absolutely.
PAs. I'm not meeting anybody sitting on my couch.
Mm-mm.
And that's my issue, is it's like, I will gladly go out and audition for this part. You know, knowing that someday I will have to turn down co-star parts if I get to be a series regular in something, sure. But I'm not at that point now. I'm not a household name. Nobody knows who I am. So I'm more than happy to go out and play your smaller part in the hopes that you'll remember me maybe for something else down the road. It's all part of the networking.
Yeah, I think, I think then, you know, it can be a case-by-case basis. You know, you get an audition. I mean, maybe if you're only going out for that,
yeah,
you might start questioning it. Oh, maybe they're only seeing me.
Or if you're only going out for woman number four,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, at some point, maybe you do have to say, I don't want you to see me like this.
Yeah,
let's try and get some bigger parts.
And now, at the level that you're at right now, coming off of the success of Mad Men with Meredith, do you find that there is more pressure on you to find bigger parts? Or how are your agents treating you in that way? Are they Like, you know what? She just had a recurring on Mad Men. She really can't do this, you know, laundromat lady or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, since Mad Men ended, I have not gone out for anything like super small. Mm-hmm. If they sent me something, I certainly would. I mean, I trust my agents.
That's good.
So, but the stuff that they are sending me out on is good stuff.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
It's good guest stars, series regulars.
Great.
That kind of stuff. So.
Do you feel pressure now to get on a show again? Like to be a regular on a show or a recurring on a show again?
I mean, I certainly want to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Totally. I don't feel pressure quite yet. I mean, we'll see. Maybe.
I mean, do you put it on yourself at all? Are you kind of like getting antsy? Because I know as actors, like my last job that I worked was in May, mm-hmm. and but everything that I've done in the past year is just now starting to air, so it kind of looks like I'm still like doing stuff and working or whatever.
Yeah.
But actually, the last job I physically worked and booked was in May, but so you start to get antsy. After a while, you start to be like, okay.
You get super antsy.
When's the next one? Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, I read something just recently. I think it was Dustin Hoffman saying that he still worries that every part, when he's finished, is going to be his last. I don't think that feeling ever goes away.
Right.
We always feel like the last thing we do could, and it could.
Yeah.
That's the scary part. It really could.
It really could be because you're so much of this business is out of your control. Mm-hmm. Was that the Dustin Hoffman Masterclass? Did you watch that?
It could have been from there.
Or like a quote from him?
Yeah.
So I had, talking about that, being out of control and like you never know what's in your control. A few weeks ago, I had an audition. My manager called me. It was the same day audition. She said, you've got to get over to Radford Studios at like 3:00 this afternoon. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I have my daughter. Mm-hmm. So I called a friend and I said, can you please come over? And like, she's napping at that time. Would you mind? And I raced out to Radford. Yeah. I got there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I walked in, I signed in like you do, and I'm waiting. I'm like, this is weird. There's nobody here. I was like, it must be the first one. Okay, cool, cool, cool. So I'm waiting and waiting. 15 minutes go by, and I'm like, this is so strange. Like, no one's coming to check on me. Like, I'm well
past
my appointment. There was a sign-in sheet. Yeah. But there was names on it from like earlier in the day, mm-hmm. like 11 o'clock and so. And I was like, okay, that's weird. And so I stood out in the hall for a second, and the casting director pokes her head out, and she goes, can I help you? And I was like, oh, I'm Heather Brooker. I'm here, you know, by 3:00 audition. And she was like, oh, honey, we canceled the afternoon session.
Oh.
And she goes, and I just stood there and I was like, for real? I was like, when? When did you cancel? She goes, about 5 minutes after we sent out that initial email. And she goes, we emailed everybody and let them know that it was canceled. Oh, and I was like, oh. I was like, that totally sucks so hard. Oh, yeah. So, but on the plus side, I got to talk with them for a few minutes because we joked around about it a little bit, and they took my headshot anyway. And she said, great. You know what? We'll call you back in for something else. Sorry, this happened. And I said, she said, what happened was, my whole point of this long story is what happened was earlier in the day, like right after they'd had that first session for this part, the writers changed it at lunchtime. Took the role out completely and made it a man. Mm-hmm. And so all these women had come in. There was probably like 12 or so on the sign-in sheet that had auditioned. And they will never know that that's what happened.
Right.
And it's
until
so...
Until they watch it.
Until they watch it and they go, oh, it was yeah. It's a guy now.
Mm-hmm.
And
which still doesn't make you feel that good.
No, of course not. Because you're like, oh, because you spend all that time and energy and, you know, you prepare and, you know, race to get to Radford. And the casting director was like, you know what, though? It's so much of it is out of your hands. And she's like, it's not about talent most of the time. And it's about the production side of things. It's about what the producers yeah. want. And, you know, and she's like, you guys as actors really have to just let it go the minute you leave your audition. It's so much easier said than done. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because it's your dream. It's what you want.
Yeah. And especially those times when, you know, you could be perfect for that part.
Oh yeah.
And they just don't see it.
They don't see it.
It's hard. It's so hard. I mean, everyone, even my mother is like, I don't know how you do it, Stephanie. I could never do it.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's tough, but what's my alternative? Go back to retail?
Right.
No.
Right. Do you have a degree in theater?
I do.
You went to USC, right? Mm-hmm. I read on your website that you said your parents are the reason you're funny. Is that right?
I mean, I credit it to them making us move around so much.
Are you an only child?
No, I have an older brother.
Okay.
He's not that funny.
You hear no, that?
He's funny. He laughs a lot.
What's his name?
My brother laughs a lot. Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, you're not that funny.
Yeah.
you heard it here. Stephanie is way funnier.
But yeah, we moved around like 3-4 times when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And I think it just forced me to...
Was your dad in the military?
No, he was in radio.
What?
So the company, he wasn't on the air.
Oh, but still cool.
But yeah, he worked in radio and then he retired last year. But the company that he would be working for would get bought by another company. So we'd have to move wherever that new company was. So we were all over the place. And yeah, it just makes you kind of develop a personality to...
Sure.
Fit in new
make
places
and make
new friends and
yeah.
I don't know if I'm like that funny, but but I think it's been working out okay.
I don't know if I'm that funny.
Yeah.
You are funny.
Well,
do you want to do comedy or would you prefer to stay with dramas? Because you have your character on Mad Men was so cute and quirky that it seemed very natural for you to do.
Oh yeah, I love comedy. Being the comedic element on a dramatic show was so much fun.
Oh yeah, I bet.
I mean, people would like sigh relief when I would walk in. They'd be like, "Oh,
thank God,
Meredith's here!
Yeah,
yay!
Yeah,
we're gonna
laugh what a good
today." Yeah, it was great. I would certainly love to do that again, but then I also love single camera comedy.
Yeah.
I've never done multicam. Mm-hmm. I would love to, especially after going to watch the taping of Mom.
Yeah.
Have you seen that show?
I've seen it. Yeah. Yeah.
What an unbelievable cast of women.
Yeah.
There's
Allison Janney, right?
Allison Janney,
Anna Faris,
Octavia Spencer.
Oh, she's on the show now? Mm-hmm. Wait, was she on from the beginning?
No, I think she started last season.
Okay, because she was on a different show, like called the Red Band Society or something
about
kids with cancer, which sounded like such a major bummer.
Yeah, I never watched that.
I don't think that did well. I don't think anybody watched it. Maybe that's why she's on Moms
Maybe,
now.
Yeah. And she's just, I mean, she's so wonderful to watch. Jamie Presley, it's just such a great group that I was like, wow. I mean, I was getting like choked up, especially watching someone I know. Yeah. Be in the company of all those wonderful women and getting to do that every week. And, you know, it took her a long time to get there. Mm-hmm. So it was emotional. And I was just so happy for her. And I was like, oh, my God, like that is the job that I want.
Yeah. It's so interesting because those are the jobs I feel like the multicam style of television that are sort of going away.
Mm-hmm.
They're not
there aren't that many.
There aren't that many being made, at least not on the major networks anymore. Like TV Land is doing some stuff. National Geographic is doing live action half hour comedies now. Mm. Isn't that crazy? All of the cable, a lot of cable networks are starting to get in on the half hour game.
Yeah,
multicam
I think
game.
TBS. Mm-hmm. I think they have a couple.
TBS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's such a great sort of setup for actors because it's, you know, it's the closest thing to a 9-to-5er if you can get one in this business.
And live theater.
And live theater combined because you get that instant reaction from audience. So many of my friends say, like, if that's their dream job, that they would be on a multicam. But yet there's so few of them being made.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to revisit your pilot. And your scripts. Was it a multicam?
Mine was not multicam.
Oh, was it a single cam?
You know, Ed specifically has us write single camera.
Why is that? Why? Did he say that's sort of where the industry's going?
It could be that, or it's just easier to write single camera. I'm not sure why he had us do that, but we all wrote single cam.
I feel like...
It may be easier to sell.
Yeah.
Just and easier to work on if you've never written a pilot before.
That's
I'm not
true.
Sure.
They're so much more expensive to make, though, and they take so much longer.
Yeah.
I wrote a pilot once with my friend Ed Ackerman, and it was a multicam, and it had, like, it was not the best. It had, like, we needed to go back and massage it quite a bit because it was sort of cliched, and with multicams, there's this, you feel like you need to make every character broad,
right,
and much bigger and, you know, wackier than they probably would be in a normal single cam setting. And I think we maybe went a little too far with some of our characters. It's hard. Writing for television is hard. People who do it is...
Yeah, writing in general is hard,
yeah.
I mean, one of the things Ed told me when we had lunch, he was like, you know, don't worry about the pilot. He's like, you can pick that up anytime. Just start writing. Just get in the habit of writing. Write short stories. Write poems. Write songs. Just write. Sorry, Ed.
How's that
I haven't
going?
Done it.
But
it was nice to hear that, yeah, I can just write. I would love to take...
What's holding you back, do you think? What's your...
I don't know.
Am I pressuring you enough right now to start writing again?
Yeah, I don't know. Is it
the lack of deadline?
No, when I get into it, I get into it. And when I don't, I don't. I don't really have any excuse. Mm-hmm. I mean, yesterday I sat and watched 3 hours of television where I could have written for at least one of those hours.
Sure.
But I didn't. I guess I'm just lazy. I don't know.
I get that way too, though. I think in my mind, I have so many ideas. I'm like, oh, I could write it. This would be a great show. Oh, this would be a great show. And I'll sort of jot down the ideas and then never...
See, I'm the opposite. I have no ideas.
Oh, really?
I told Ed I wanted to take his class again, but I don't have any ideas.
Maybe
I'm just not a good writer.
Maybe acting is just where it's at. There's no pressure. You don't have to be an actor, writer. I think there's a lot of people who think, oh, I have to be an actor, writer, director, producer. Mm-hmm. And you don't. Like, you, if you just want to be an actor, be an actor. You mean improviser, actor, comedian.
But it does seem like you got to write your own material almost. Yeah. It just seems like that's...
Now, isn't that what Jill's doing? Like, didn't she take some meetings recently with... like, I think Disney was or something.
Yeah. I think she said some good stuff.
Yeah. It comes from, I guess, generating your own content. And there's, I think, such a movement right now in the industry to look for female writers and the female voice, a big push for diversity. How true that is at the top, you know, the upper echelon shows on your major networks, I don't really know. But it seems like there's a lot more diverse shows on the air now than there ever was before.
Yeah. I've lost out a couple parts because
of diversity.
They needed to go with someone ethnic.
Yeah. It's a
big... I understand.
Yeah.
And there's, as we said, like, there's nothing we can... That is completely out of our control. If I could change it, I would. But...
Right. That happens to me a lot. There's a couple of ladies who I see whenever they walk into the audition, and I'm like, oh, man. If they come in and they audition with me, I'm like, oh, man, I'm not going to get this one. You know, and it sounds like whenever I mention that to people, it sounds like, oh, you're complaining, but you get everything else. I'm like, well, I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the nature of this business. There's a big push for diversity right now, which is good. It's good. It's also, you know, can be frustrating if you're not diverse. So, we're allowed to have those feelings. Everyone calm down on the internet right now. We're allowed to have those feelings of frustration.
I mean, it's so hard to begin with. Then you add that into the mix as well.
Right.
It's just another
uphill battle. Another thing against you. So where do you go from here? What do you want to do now? I know you said you want to be a series regular. What else are you working on? You're in the Groundlings?
Doing Groundlings. I think we're going on class 5. It's very hard. Improv is
so hard.
Such a different way of thinking, especially Groundlings.
They do it
UCB.
Differently. Yeah. They're really big on space work.
Space work, emotion, space work. Character, all that stuff. It's been fun. I mean, I'm laughing so much every class, but it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
They're very strict, where it's like, if you don't start the scene with your who, what, where, and your space work, and your eye contact, you have to do all of these things before you even start speaking. That's how it was when I took it. I don't know if they're still doing that. But it was like so much to think about. And my feeling was like, this is supposed to be improvised. Like, I'm not supposed to really be thinking at all. Right. I'm supposed to kind of just throw it out there. But
yeah, it's
planned not to not think. Like, it's like Yeah, it's tough. Improvising is good. Improvisers are really, really talented.
I know, because they make it look so easy. Mm-hmm. And it's so hard. And I have no desire to be, you know, like
a professional.
An SNL.
Sure.
Like, that's not a goal of mine. Mm-hmm. I want to be on SNL
as the
guest, but not as like a player.
A cast member.
But I do. I think it's so important just to always be taking classes and, you know, pushing yourself, and no matter how much you're working, to still be doing that stuff if you have the time. Yeah. I also take my regular weekly class, cold reading class.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I take with Brian Reese.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of Brian Reese before. I was looking a while back for an acting class to take, and I came across his name.
Yeah, he's great. It's just a good workout once a week, mm-hmm. and it just keeps you going.
Yeah.
Because you do, you get rested. I actually took last month off when I was shooting this movie, mm-hmm. and I had my first class yesterday, and I could tell as soon as the lights went up and my scene was about to start that my concentration was off. You get rusty.
Yeah.
I feel like acting's the one job where people think you don't have to do any work and you can just be able to do it.
Well, and that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before we started recording, is that today's industry is looking for the Vine stars, the mm-hmm. YouTube stars, the, you know, kid from Nebraska who's just like putting themselves on YouTube for, you know, makeup lessons or, you know, whatever. They're now becoming actors in TV shows because they have an instant social media following, which turns into instant advertising dollars if you've got eyeballs, you know, on them. And so there's a lot of people who don't think they need to take acting classes and work on their craft. It is too bad. It is too bad, because for the people who are out here and who are studying acting and who are trying to get better and stay good, and, you know, it's frustrating. Somebody comes along as a Vine star, mm-hmm. and like, you made a 6-second video and now you're on TV. Like,
I will
what
tell
the
you
hell?
That in my Groundlings class, I am a good, I'm not going to say how old I am, but I'm a good probably 10 years older than most of the kids
really?
In my class. They're like all like fresh out of college.
Oh, isn't that the weirdest?
Going to be on SNL tomorrow.
Oh, no. Bless your heart.
Oh, my God. She was so sweet. She had missed the class before, and she was going to a concert. Of course, people, I had no idea who they were. And I asked her how it was, and the first thing she said to me was, "Oh, my God, I saw my favorite YouTube star, and I asked her for a picture, and she was amazing, and she was so nice." And I'm like,
Oh, my God. I would not be able to pick out a YouTube star if they came up and introduced themselves to me. I'd be like, I don't know.
It's not, but that is what the kids are doing.
They
sit and watch YouTube all day.
It's the future. It's so weird to me, like, because the people on YouTube are not like, I don't know, they're generating content, but it's like, I go on there if I need to figure out how to like fix something on my car,
mm-hmm.
or like
convert like a file to
MP3. Like, yeah, like something like that, like a how-to video. I'm not going on there like and maybe that's what these kids are doing. They're all doing like how to do your hair, you know, like Justin Bieber or whatever. And everyone wants to know. I don't know, I don't get it. Maybe it's because I'm old. And I'm, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
we
didn't
today,
grow up with that.
Yeah, these kids today and their interweb interactions.
It's wild.
It is wild. Although I do say I understand the need for it. Mm-hmm. I understand it. I get it. Producers want to make sure people are looking at their content, and it's free advertising if you've got someone who already is an instant audience. Tell me a little bit about Fear Inc.
Fear Inc. It was so much fun. My first feature. Mm-hmm. It was a blast. I don't know if you've ever done night shoots before, but they are brutal.
I think on a commercial a long, long time ago.
They're brutal, mm-hmm. especially when you have like 3 in a row, because mm-hmm. you have your whole day and you're doing stuff and you're active, and then you go to work and you have a whole day.
Right.
You never really get much sleep, mm-hmm. and your whole body's off and doesn't know what time of day it is. But it was a blast. It was a great group of people.
What kind of character did you play?
I played an East Coaster. Oh. Surprise, surprise. A lovely girl. She's a wife of and a mother of 2, I think. The kids aren't in the movie, but... And then, yeah, me and my husband come to LA to visit friends, and there's this company called Fear Inc. Mm-hmm. The guy in LA already is like a big fright guy. He loves being scared and scary movies and all that kind of stuff. And then did you ever see the movie The Game with Michael Douglas?
I don't. I'm a bad scary movie person.
It's not scary.
Oh, wait.
It's so good.
What's the game about?
So Michael Douglas gets this birthday gift from his brother, and it's like a game. So the whole movie, you know, things like crazy things start happening, but you know it's a part of the game. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, wait a minute, is this real or is this still part of the game?
Oh, okay.
And
like a thriller.
Yeah, it's so good. You have
so
to
is this more like a thriller or is this like a horror film?
It's horror, but it has a lot of comedic elements to it.
I think a lot some of the better horror movies do. They have a little bit of a funny element to it because the audience, their audiences like to be scared but also laugh.
Yeah. It's in the vein of a Scream.
Yeah.
Or that type of movie. Okay. Or Cabin in the Woods. Like there are a lot of good twists in it and unexpected things.
Fun.
It was fun. It was so much
like
fun.
It. Yeah. And when is that going to come out? Like, because you just wrapped it. It probably won't be till next year sometime.
Yeah.
Like.
2016 sometime. Okay. I think their plan is to do the festival circuit, that type stuff.
We'll be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, it should be fun.
I'm so glad that you came by today to talk
to
me.
Too.
This is so much fun. I maybe when we're done, we can go into more detail about making out with John Hamm. I mean, kissing John Hamm. No. Just kidding. Where can people find you if they want to follow you on Twitter or Instagram? What are your social media places?
Twitter, you can follow me. Let me get this right. Because they're all different.
Yeah.
I guess there are a lot of Stephanie Drakes out there. Twitter is Drake Stephanie M.
Okay.
And Instagram is Stephanie Drake 1.
Okay. So Stephanie Drake M.
No, Drake Stephanie M.
Oh, Drake Stephanie M.
So confusing.
I'll put it on my website too, on Motherhood and Hollywood.
Drake Stephanie M for Twitter and then Stephanie Drake 1 for Instagram.
Okay. And are you going to get on Periscope now, too?
I'm totally going to get
on the
Periscope.
We Periscoped just before this, you guys. If you'd missed it, too bad. It's probably gone already. You'll never see it again. So everybody take a minute then. Go check out Stephanie on her social media stuff. Also, you have a website, stephaniedrake.com. I'll put all the links up on Motherhood in Hollywood so you guys can find Stephanie and get a little more information about her and her upcoming projects as well. And you can find Motherhood in Hollywood at MIH Podcast on Twitter and Motherhood in Hollywood on Instagram. And don't forget to leave a review for Motherhood in Hollywood and iTunes. You guys, you have 1 week left to submit a review to be entered to win our September 15th drawing for the Honest Company bath bundle and Motherhood in Hollywood tote bag.
I love the Honest Company.
Yeah, I do too. I love it so much. So you guys make sure you go and enter there by leaving a review on September 15th. And then on the following Monday's show, I will announce the winner. Yay. So you'll be basically famous. You'll be internet famous for winning our first giveaway. So thank you again, Stephanie. I appreciate you coming. I've had so much fun. And we'll be watching for your movie to come out. And lots of good things. I'm sending lots of good juju your way.
Send them my way.
May big shows come your way, lady. Thanks again, you guys. And have a great week. We'll see you next time. Bye. Balls.